Do you think life is simpler after you retire? For some, it's actually more complicated when facing issues about health, estate plans, probate, long-term care, and more. That's why attorney CPA Joe Cordell hosts Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors and an open forum for older adults with important questions about their future. Here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Welcome back. As promised last week, our star guest, this is a real opportunity, Susan.
It is.
For us to have on here again, Art Bernabo. Tell our audience again about Art Bernabo.
Well, if you were not with us last week, we had a great discussion about nutrition and diet. And Art is a certified personal trainer. He's a certified group exercise instructor, certified Live Strong at the YMCA instructor for cancer survivors. He graduated from Westminster College in 1961, but in the year 2000, he decided to return to college and study some things that he was really interested in, and that is diet and nutrition. And he received his degree in, dietetic nutrition, dietetic technician.
Yes, and perfect. That is the reason he is here, is we want to pick up this discussion of diet. I mean, we try to think, don't we, Susan, about things that will be of most value to our listeners.
We do.
And really, I have to say, and I know that I speak a lot about the important topics we have on the show, and we try to select them carefully, but I can't think of any topic that is as important as people taking control of their diet, especially after age 60.
It is very important, and obviously, the sooner we start with our nutrition, the better off we're going to be, but it is never too late.
And of course, that raises the whole topic that Susan and I had been talking about this a little bit before we went on the air with Art. And I want to pick up with that discussion where, you know, Susan, you were expressing to some extent the frustration that living in America, probably America's worse than most countries in terms of the number of diets that are out there and the misinformation people get. I mean, how do you know what to do?
It is a challenge that I face all the time. I mean, I Google diet and nutrition. What can I do to be healthy for my family? Obviously, fruits and vegetables. I know that much. But then there's all different kinds of things that will help inflammation, that will help this, that will help that. And I just don't even know where to start sometimes.
What do you think, Art?
First of all, the statement that I know everybody heard that says, you are what you eat. You know what? There just might be some truth to that clever statement. If we eat a high fat, and high so vague, but if you eat a lot of fat, there's a tendency that you might become fat. So
contrary to what some people would tell you.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, where do you start? I'm going to keep repeating, repeating, repeating. Educate yourself. Defend yourself. Understand that the news media just jumps all over the health issues, diet. They just want to. Sometimes they sell a service, they sell a product. Educate yourself on the basics. That's the first thing I would say. And then where else would you start? If the foundation, if the bulk of your plate is fruits and veggies, man, you can't go wrong. Someone's going to tell me, well, they're expensive. Well, you know, a six-pack of beer costs about $6-7. I don't know how much.
We won't even talk about what cigarettes are.
No, we're not gonna, but anyway, they are expensive. However, all food stores advertise, look for the specials, okay? So a doctor's appointment is more expensive than maybe some fruits and veggies. So maybe as a health prevention, you would change by starting with fruits and veggies. But you could talk for hours.
And that's a good way of thinking about this. Before we go to our first real topic for the day, I want people to get it that what you said last week and you're saying this week, Art, that can eliminate a lot of this confusion about what should I eat. You're saying that virtually every reputable expert agrees that you should eat lots of fruits and vegetables.
For sure.
And you're saying what you put on the balance of your plate, I'm assuming what, maybe 80% of your plate or 75% maybe fruits and vegetables. What you're saying, whatever you put on the balance of your plate probably won't matter so much as long as you're including the fruits and vegetables.
There you go.
All right. That's practical advice, isn't
it? It's very practical advice. And I think part of what I struggle with sometimes is I feel like I do better than what I had growing up. We ate lots of corn. That was our vegetable. Mm-hmm. Mashed potatoes. That was our vegetable. But we need to think outside the box. We need to try a few more things. Like we have an Asian pear that we're going to try here a little bit later. Try some of those new things. Just get one.
But all vegetables aren't the same. For example, Susan, you're giving examples of starches. Starches, I mean, they still qualify as a plant. Are they, I guess they're a vegetable?
They are. If you really talk about the term veggies, usually a nutrition discusses greens or non-starch greens. So Susan said we're going to try testing a fruit today that's not too common. It's called a Korean pear. If you just go to a store, I work at Dearborn. If you look at the area where there's greens, if you haven't tried mustard greens, you haven't lived. If you haven't tried collard greens, I mean, you're just missing the boat. And you know what? Not only do they taste good, they're loaded with that word vitamins, antioxidants. If you haven't had kohlrabi, Brussels sprouts, on and on and on and on. And you know what? If you don't like Brussels sprouts, try another veggie. Because other veggies have maybe the same amount of vitamins and minerals. Just try a variety. That's the trick.
So is it most important to just get them in your diet? What about the ways that you fix them? I've seen a lot of recipes going around for Brussels sprouts right now, and you roast them with some Parmesan and some butter and some other types of things like that. So what do you do?
Here's the issue. You go to the restaurant, they bring it to your table, and it's dripping with stuff.
Right.
You don't mean butter, do you?
Or oil, yeah. especially now, olive oil you may think is not so bad, but...
Yeah, okay. Let me talk about the food preparation, because fruits and veggies, or particularly veggies, if you overcook with intense heat at a length of a time, some of the vitamins and the minerals will leach out of a vitamin or out of a veggie. So what's the answer? The best way to prepare and to have them look beautiful is steam veggies. You can do it in a microwave so you don't overcook it. But here's the other way. I'm very fortunate. Here's what my wife does almost every week. She makes vegetable soup. So you cook vegetable soup and it leaches out. But you know what it leaches out into? The soup that you're going to eat. It's a win-win. So what she does, she'll make a big pot, then she puts it in individual dishes, but either freezes some or puts some in the refrigerator, and almost every day I'm going to have one bowl of soup. So yes, you can overcook fruits and veggies. You hit the nail on the head. Mm-hmm. So steaming it or making it into soup, stir fry's not bad. But, you know, whatever floats your boat on that, eating some fruits and veggies the way you like it. And how about raw? We forgot to mention raw. I don't like broccoli if it's raw. Now, I'll eat it if it's lightly steamed. But there's others I'll eat that's quite enjoyable.
In a salad, for example.
In a salad, yeah. For sure, yeah. So I got to mention one more thing. I just got to say this. Probably the best-selling item day in and day out at a normal food store is the word iceberg lettuce. I don't know why that's the case, but it is. The iceberg lettuce happens to be the least nutrition green that a person, because it's 99% water and the rest is cellulose, tiny, tiny bit of vitamin. But if you go to a... romaine lettuce, loaded with vitamin. If you go to red leaf, loaded. Green leaf, you know, arugula is another lettuce, but sure enough, iceberg lettuce, bestseller.
So is color a reliable clue as the amount of nutritional content?
Yep, usually the darker the color. Not only that, but remember, colors indicate antioxidants. A different color means a different antioxidant. So yeah, now that doesn't mean that a pale color like onion, that doesn't mean it isn't nutrition, But I'm going to say the word maybe not as nutritious. It's kind of a vague. But darker the color, yep. Variety of color, right on.
So what about, for example, fruits and vegetables are good. What about grains? You know, you hear the issue of gluten coming up mm-hmm. when discussion of grains. Do you regard grains as something that should be included in the diet?
Two different subjects here. The word grain and then gluten is something else. Grains, the market, the companies out there that make different breads, boy, they know what they're doing. They're kind of sneaky in a nice way. But unless the ingredient information on the nutrition fact label, it has to start out by saying whole grain. If it doesn't say that, it's not whole grain. The value of a whole grain bread, may it be wheat grain or rye whole grain, is that it has all the nutrients that the natural grains are in it. Back in the 20s and 30s, when the white bread was created, the manufacturer did that because they knew that prior to, the breads were coarse. They're coarse because they had a lot of fiber in it. Mm-hmm. So they come out with a white bread. Boy, was that a stinker, because...
But it tastes good. Sorry. Had to get that in. That's honest for you.
Oh, they got rid of that fiber.
The truth hurts. And I'm not bad mouthing white bread. Unless you eat a lot of it, you're asking for problems. But it doesn't have all of the vitamins and minerals that whole grain does. So that, you know, it's an education, learning that whole grain, if the bread starts out and it says wheat, well, big deal. 99% of all breads are wheat. If it says multigrain, that's sneaky. It's not whole grain. That's okay.
Or natural. Or natural.
Boy, that's a word for you. I'm not sure what that word means. But, yeah, natural just doesn't cut it. But it's, again, your education on that. Now you said you want to talk about gluten. Oh, boy. Are you sure you want to talk about gluten?
So grains and gluten don't have to be. A lot of people think that when they think about breads / grains, they think that that always means gluten. And maybe you can clear that up for us.
Well, gluten is a protein. And you got to understand something, that protein, particularly to older folks, I don't care what age you are, that's a valuable nutrient. It's called a macronutrient because it provides calories. But a protein, if you eat inadequate quantities of protein, your chances of having reasonable muscle tissue, it decreases, because that's the main role of a protein, is to support making muscle tissue. So gluten is available in wheat products, and there's certain other grains, but gluten today is sensationalized by the news media. They do it because somewhere along the line, they found out, and it's backed up by some science. I'm not saying that gluten, to avoid it, is wrong. But there are certain people who are hypersensitive to the gluten reaction. And if you're one of the few folks in the world who are hypersensitive to gluten, okay, or even mildly sensitive, then you should avoid it. You should see a doctor. A doctor's going to give you a blood test. It'll quickly tell you yes or no if you are sensitive to gluten. Because gluten excessively, if you're sensitive, can create celiac, which is high inflammation that Joe was talking about at one time. And it's painful. Mm-hmm. And there's no medicine to correct celiac disease. The only way you correct celiac is don't eat gluten products. So, but with majority of the people out there, they aren't sensitive. So you should take a long breath before you automatically eliminate gluten. That's my only point.
And I think that it's like a lot of things that end up becoming this this campaign in the popular press is that they start out with a kernel of truth, mm-hmm. and especially paleos have taken hold of this. And paleo diet, yeah, I think that some many listeners are familiar with is the emphasis on a diet that supposedly humans ate before the agricultural revolution. So anything that has occurred since the agricultural revolution, such as grains, mm-hmm. humans eating grains, they argue, you know, the body's not designed to do. But as you're pointing out, Art, there are a lot of people who eat grains, and most people who eat grains, and they have absolutely no problems whatsoever. But anyone who does, they can test if they're sensitive
to it.
There
you go.
And then if they are, then they choose not to eat.
They better not eat. And so the way you find that is you read the ingredients or the message on the label of bread or whatever. It'll tell you gluten-free or contains gluten. Unfortunately, the marketing departments of these companies, they just shout that word on so many products that have no chance of even having a gluten. But people pretty soon they get the idea, boy, if all these people are saying don't eat gluten, maybe there's something to it.
And exactly. It starts feeding on itself.
Let me tell you. So anyway, educated.
Educated. So your message then on grains, we're about to go into a break, but your message on grains is that, you know, for the substantial majority of people, grains are fine. If you find that you're sensitive to it, there are gluten is fine. Gluten. There are alternative grains they can eat, right?
Oh, for sure.
So we'll talk just a second more about this when we come back. Wonderful discussion with Art Bernabeau.
You're listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors. Presented by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. And now, attorney CPA, Joe Cordell.
Okay, we're back with Art Bernabeau talking about diet. Now, this whole discussion that we were having about gluten and the fact that it's overstated as a concern, you can see that for some people it is an issue, but for most people you'd say it is not a problem. Let's talk, but before we leave this topic, for those people who don't want or can't eat gluten, what are the alternatives to that in terms of grains that they might eat?
Well, you know, now you're talking about an area that I don't know if science is totally conclude, but oats.
Oats, yeah.
Okay, so I'm pretty sure that oats would be free of that word.
It
gluten.
Is. Yeah. Okay. It's supposed to be.
Well, unless, of course, I have some friends that actually are gluten-free, and you have to buy gluten-free oats because of cross-contamination in the growing process.
Really?
Okay. Yep. So you're really talking about a subject that is really tricky. But there's other grains out there, if you do research, that are healthy and you can stay away from gluten. But boy, Susan's right. There's some connection, maybe not as strong. Oats would be maybe safer than wheat products. But again, some people, and we're all DNA different, maybe you're not going to react to oats like you would wheat products. She mentions one person. How about the next two or three dozen?
Right.
You know, you don't know until you try it. If you are sensitive to oats, you're going to feel it. I mean, a person that has celiac disease, they know when they've eaten gluten or another item that just hypers that celiac issue.
And let's acknowledge something else that at least I've found is that it's possible for some people that eat gluten, for example, or maybe grains generally, you know, that their bodies may react, not in the serious way that you're describing, Art, but they may have, you know, skin irritations or something that develop. I mean, I guess, as you said, everybody's different. And if they notice that, then they can just choose to focus on the products that, for example, don't have gluten if the gluten is the problem.
There's the answer.
So let's talk about something that we've got to get to in this discussion. Should we all be buying organic products? I mean, you've talked about the importance of fruits and vegetables. So we get to the grocery store and we see this small section that says organic. and yet these significantly higher prices. And then we see the other 90% of the fruits mm-hmm. and vegetables. Should we be going to that area, that 10% area that has organic and paying the higher prices?
Well, first of all, you said small section. I want to tell you something. That section is growing.
Getting bigger all the time.
Getting bigger all the time because of the interest. Okay, now, first of all, organic, here's what it means, that the farmer who grew the product does not use artificial fertilization and he doesn't use pesticides or insecticides. That's what organic is mean. Most of the senior citizens that I help in a store, they are more negative towards the word organic than somebody in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. And I tell you what's funny about that. If that senior citizen lived in the age prior to Second World War, everything grown prior to Second World War was organic. Mm-hmm. There was no artificial fertilization. Didn't come about till after the Second World War. But they're still, they don't like that word organic. But to answer your question, now I'm going to give you an opinion because this is not scientifically. If I was a cancer survivor, I would go overboard to avoid the word toxins. Now to do that, you're safer to eat organic food. If I'm not a cancer survivor, and I hope most of the folks out there do, have not had cancer, here's the advice I would give. Joe said it's more expensive, and that is true. I would look at the product and see the outer layer of the product to see how thick or defensive it is. I wouldn't buy organic banana. The thickness of that skin should eliminate any absorption. I said should, okay? I just wouldn't pay that money for it. Now, here's what I would pay. Berries, every berry, the membrane, the protection from pesticides is not very thick. So if you want to buy organic, buy every berry as organic, okay? And then there's some people that claim that it tastes differently. I don't notice it, but mm-hmm. you know, somebody else might. But it costs more, but so does medicine. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is another protective. So, you know, it's a vague subject. Right
and
now.
But organic is becoming more affordable, isn't it?
That's a matter of opinion.
Yeah.
It's more. Here's the reason it's more expensive. It takes the farmer longer to grow the product if there's natural fertilization versus hyper
chemicals.
You know, it just is.
Yeah.
So if it's going to take longer, it's going to probably be more expensive. So I don't know how to answer that question.
So Monsanto can do a better job than God did with that stuff. It looks like.
You know, maybe that's a matter of opinion, but. But, you know, again, if it's advertised, for example, I think we're advertising right now organic Brussels sprouts. Well, that's a pretty good price and something to consider.
That's what I was just going to say. As the mom in the group, I watch the sales. And so I've noticed that a lot more of the circulars that I get each week for the grocery stores are offering organic produce
there you go.
At a discounted rate.
Right.
So you do have to watch the sales. And I do think you can look at some of those sale items and buy them. And that's when you can make a
very
difference.
Very well said.
And people, though, older, over 60, maybe some of their discomfort with organic is the price. I mean, they're very budget conscious.
Sure.
And so for them, they have to sacrifice more if they decide to commit to that. I've been reading articles about how now Whole Foods at one time, you know, dominated this whole area. Mm-hmm. And now, like you're with Dierbergs Art, they're doing more of that. And I'm sure others are. And now even a huge player like Walmart is entering the field.
Yep.
And then, you know, Amazon apparently is going to provide grocery products and organic. So
right.
It may be that prices come down mm-hmm. as competition
I
increases.
I bet you're right. I hope you're right, and I bet you're right. But the consumer demand's growing. It is. So when the demand increases, so does the space in the produce department. Yeah, it's easier to find right now.
Hmm. So let's I want to talk a little bit about, if we're going to cover diet, it's only fair to talk a little bit about the physical activity piece.
For sure.
And it turns out that Art, while of course, you know, you're a dietetic technician, you're also an authority on exercise and fitness. You teach classes, you've been trained in that area. You're a fitness instructor, right?
Exactly.
So you've been affiliated with Livestrong. I'm familiar with that.
Are you really?
Yeah, and I don't know. It's
Livestrong at the YMCA?
No, I was thinking about the athlete, Lance.
No, let's talk about Livestrong at the YMCA.
You don't want it associated with...
No, I don't mean that. It's just there's a difference, and they're really not associated.
Okay, so I thought Lance Armstrong
started Livestrong.
No, he didn't start, but he did endorse it later
on. See. Okay? I didn't know that.
And then something happened along the way with Mr. Livestrong, and I still admire the guy. You get brain cancer, and suddenly you can ride a bike. I don't care what you're taking.
Yeah.
I mean, that's discipline.
And clearly he performed well at later when they knew he wasn't taking it.
Right.
Apparently he came back and competed. And
I still admire him. I do.
Tell me, so Livestrong was something that predated Lance Armstrong, and that was it originally associated with the YMCA?
Well, if it's called Livestrong at the YMCA, yes. Basically what it is, and I instruct that, it's very rewarding. It's a class that we work with cancer survivors, because when
specifically
you,
cancer survivors.
Oh, for sure. Only cancer survivors.
I didn't know that.
Only.
Okay,
only.
Go ahead.
See, the issue is 25, 30, 40 years ago, a doctor would say after the person's received the medication,
chemo
is so, and radiation, they used to tell the person, you know, you take it easy now and protect your body. That's not true. So the opposite, physical activity and properly instruct a person how to exercise. And you take it easy, but then you push yourself, and that's what I do. So anyways, for cancer survivor, here's the beautiful word about Livestrong. It's free. You don't have to belong. You don't have to become a member of the YMCA. It's free. You can. It's 12 weeks. It's twice a week. It's about an hour and 15 minutes. It's physical activity. It's exercise. Here's the beauty of it, though. All people that you're with a group of people. You're not just by yourself. Everybody else is a cancer survivor. You know what happens pretty soon? They bond.
Mm-hmm. Camaraderie.
Oh, exactly. Let me tell you, they're thick as thieves, and the discussion, and they help one another. It's so rewarding to teach this class. Unfortunately, every once in a while, I know somebody that just, you know, it didn't make it, and those things happen. But it's a wonderful class. It emphasizes physical activity, which is the subject you brought up.
And there's no question that the research shows that physical activity for someone who has gone through chemo or radiation and the other challenges increases their survival rates.
Oh, for sure. Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Most people wouldn't be living today if they didn't have radiation chemo. The side
effects.
But I
mean also the exercise afterwards.
Oh, for sure. And so it speeds up the recovery. So what we tell the cancer survivors, so the first day that I meet with them, I said, this is the last time I'm going to call you survivor. You are now going to be a healthy, normal person. And you're probably going to be more healthy than when you got cancer if you didn't exercise. So that's how we treat it. Yeah. It's a very positive program.
But with that, I'm sure that you have suggestions about diet to these same people.
To a certain degree, yes. I offer them the opportunity. You got to understand something. If they are just finished with radiation, with a chemo, they're going through other changes that I don't know if they're ready to now make nutrition. Mm-hmm. You see, so it varies.
And it's hard to even eat, apparently, after, you know, the effect on your taste buds.
Well, you got it.
Right.
I now have a person in my class who had surgery on the throat. His appetite is almost zero.
Okay? So you hate to tell him to diet.
Okay.
When he's not eating anything.
Right. You know, can you eat ice cream, sir? Eat all you can eat.
Right.
You know,
right.
The first issue is get more calories in
to
the
survive.
Body.
Right.
But there's other tricks. There's specific nutritionists that can work with somebody who's got appetite problems. And can you imagine, as fun eating is, not having an appetite and then watching the person next to you eat an apple or this Korean pear I'm going to give you? So, I mean, it's frustrating, but it comes back. It does come back if you work at it. Here's a simple solution that I have now given to this person is chew spearmint gum or suck on spearmint lozenger. I don't know why it helps, but there's a connection that it's going to bring back
the taste,
the sensation of taste. Yeah. And it helps a little bit. It comes. You got to work at it, you know?
Well, let me speak a more. I want you to tell us a little more generally about this tendency that we have, you know, to sit as we get older, and there's just more of that occurs, and we're gonna have to take a break. I want to come back and spend some time talking about how to incorporate these activity considerations along with the importance of diet. We'll be back in 1 second again with Art Bernabeau.
You're listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors, presented by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors, and now attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Okay, back with Art Bernabeau. Susan, this has been almost two shows. We have this last segment.
Almost two shows, and we're almost out of time, and it's gone by very quickly.
Art, you're a wealth of information. Now, I want to come back to this discussion, which only makes sense when we're talking about diet, that we mentioned the importance of activity. And especially, I mean, our audience here is 60 and above. So we know the tendency that all of us have as we get older to maybe do a little less, to sit more, spend more time in a sedentary things than we might otherwise do. So tell me, how important is it that we solve that problem, and what do you suggest to do to solve it?
Well, if you understand, first of all, that the body is built or created to move. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. If a person buys a brand new car, puts it in the garage, puts it on cement blocks and doesn't drive it, guess what? That car, it's not going to work its best a month later. Ditto for the body. You got to move the body strictly because it was made to move. It keeps the blood moving. You feel less stiff. You're using muscles just by basically walking on and on and on. It's the way to go. The most recent research, and I am so surprised that I can use the word recent, and I mean 8-10 years. That's recent. And the research is spearheaded by an association that maybe most of us can add credence to, and that is Mayo Clinic in That's pretty solid.
That's about as august.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So anyway, they are the ones spearheading this research. And the first article that I read, I don't know where I saw it, but the title was, I almost fell off my chair, and the title went something like this: Sitting is the New Smoking. I couldn't figure out. And unfortunately, you're talking to an ex-smoker. I'm ashamed of that. It is what it is. I quit 30 years ago. But anyway, sitting's the next is the next smoking. Wow, that is so powerful comment.
Now, but they don't mean if you're sitting as long as you're playing a video game. That should be okay, right?
If you win the video game. You know,
you can play tennis and stand up.
There you go.
Of course, Facebook. If you're on Facebook, surely that counts as some sort of...
When they're talking about sitting, the word is chronic sitting. The word is uninterrupted sitting is the issue. Again, I'm going to welcome the listeners to go to mayoclinic.org, O-R-G, and they got a search bar. Type in their chronic sitting and just read for yourself the information on knowing how much credence the Mayo Clinic. Here's the issue. Chronic sitting, if a person gets up in the morning, they're going to sit and have breakfast. Then they're going to get in their car, and then they're going to go to work, or they're going to go wherever, go to the theater like a senior citizen might do. Then they're going to sit down at work. They might be sitting in front of a computer. Then they're going to get up and go have lunch. By the way, they might be sitting down while they're going to have lunch. They come back, they sit in front of the computer, and then they get in their car. You know, it's unbelievable. If you track the number of hours that you sit versus standing, it would absolutely scare you.
And then when they get home, they're sitting in front of a TV probably, or maybe a computer.
I didn't say it, but boy, you hit the nail on the head.
And yet they feel like they've been busy all day long. I mean, I've caught myself doing that. I've been busy all day, and I look at my Fitbit and go, what do you mean 3,000 steps? Are you kidding me? But I've been busy all day long.
Scary thing about the most recent research. If you talk to a runner is rather, he is very cocky about his health. Most runners look lean. I mean, they just do. And I'm talking about a runner that runs 3 or 4 or 5 times a week, okay? There was an article in the magazine, I think it's called, I think this is right, The Runner's World. Is that right? Okay, it's a monthly periodical. And there's an article in there, and here's how it started out. Runners, you are not free from the research. Sitting is the next smoker. You can imagine what a runner.
That must have been shocking.
Yeah, I'm telling you what. Now, you know, rather than try to discuss what the reasons are for this, but the changes are, I think the word that the Mayo Clinic uses, when you chronic sit at a length of time, I think they use the word survival mode your body goes into. It changes your metabolic system processes. And if you talk to an ordinary person about their metabolism, they usually mean, how many calories do I burn when I'm sitting or just doing non-active? And that's what it does mean, how many calories you burn. You burn calories every second you live. So it changes that. And to understand that even if a person exercises, after they sit most of the day, they cannot neutralize the damage done by the sitting. That's a scary thing. If it wasn't Mayo Clinic, you know what? I don't think I'd believe it.
So your point, and apparently this research suggests, is that someone could if even if they at one time in one session ran, say, for an hour every day, or an hour and a half even, which we would normally say that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. But if it's not broken up, and instead we were to assume that the other 23 or 22 hours that they spent either sitting or lying down, you would say that because those are not regularly interrupted, that long stretch of time, that it's working against the time that they're running.
Absolutely, and that's what the research shows. And like anything else, because we're all different DNA, it's going to have different negative effects, not different, but degrees of damage done, absolutely. Just go to Mayo Clinic but let's talk about physical activity in general. Basically, the word physical activity means anything you do while you're not sitting. Physical activity doesn't.
Darn it.
I know.
And you know what? As crazy as it sounds, I'm a fidgeter. You know what a fidgeter is? I can't sit. I fidget. You know, there's some scientific research connected with a fidgeter because that person's going to burn. But it has nothing to do with physical activity. Let's go to physical activity. Physical activity is any routine that doesn't have a structure to it as exercise does. If you go to an aerobics class that lasts 50, 55 minutes, that class has structure, you're doing exercise. physical activities, working in your garden, that's healthy. Just being outside, that's healthy. Brisk walking just might be the best physical activity a person can do if they do it regularly. Twice a week, three times a week, you're not going to have any positive effect. Five or six times a week, that's good. You know, that's physical activity, just being active.
So you would say then people in an office environment, for example,
go ahead,
should make a point to get up, should make a point to get up periodically and walk on
perfect.
Some schedule.
Perfect.
And Matt, are there devices that can trigger this?
Oh, yeah. Fitbit.
Fitbit.
Fitbit. I have some friends who yeah. have a Fitbit, and it reminds them if they have been too sedentary.
Excellent.
And so they have a little alarm goes off, and they get up, and according to them, they're walking, they're passing each other down the hall.
Excellent.
Let's walk down the hall for 15 minutes so we can get a few more steps in, and
exactly.
then they go back to their work.
Exactly.
So you approve of that
oh,
sort
it's
of
excellent.
Approach?
The fitness bit, it makes you conscious of being inactive
right.
or you're not active enough. Yeah, okay? It is. So, but even if you don't have a Fitbit, because they're not cheap, so the senior citizen might, and he's not in front of a computer, he's watching TV. To break up the continuity of the sitting, get up. When there's a commercial, get up and march in place.
That would have them getting up a lot of commercials.
Yeah. Daytime TV tends to have more commercials, I think.
Or get up. Get up to go get a drink of water. Just break the continuity. There's now, you say devices. She mentioned Fitbit. There's now a device that's out there in the market, cost around $350. And we're probably talking about a worker, maybe more than a senior citizen. But it's called, I believe, VersaDesk. What it does, you sit this device on the desk, and the computer sits on that. And then it's on hinges when you're ready
oh,
to stand.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I've seen this.
Okay, that works because it makes sure that the worker is still productive. Because now you're talking about having a boss if you're a worker. But at the same time, you could be at home working on a computer for whatever reason if you're a senior citizen. There's another device. It's called a walking
like
treadmill.
Treadmill, right? Treadmill. I've heard of that.
I can't. That's extreme. Okay. I don't. They're expensive. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if it's safe because a treadmill, if you don't focus what you're doing on a treadmill, you know what? It'll throw you off.
And keep your hands to.
Yeah. Okay.
Available.
So anyway, the VersaDesk or a simpler deal. She mentions the Fitbit. Boy, that's a wonderful invention. Just to get up. Some people compete against each other who have Fitbits. They compete.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you get points and all that.
Exactly.
So with the desk, you're probably just standing, though. Even the act of standing is
helpful, right?
Is helpful better more
oh,
than sitting?
Oh, much. That's terrific. However, if you do excessive standing, the word excessive, I don't know what that is, but that's not healthy either. You mix them.
Yeah.
Mix them. Take turns.
Movement. You're saying movement's what's important.
That's wonderful, yeah.
The VersaDesk or any contraption that someone might devise to allow them to do their work standing versus sitting is probably going to produce more movement, though.
For sure.
I mean, when you're standing, it's much easier to move.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is. You could march in place. You could do a little stretching. Anything that does movement. You just feel better. So people are going to tell me, well, I'll tell you what I do. I'm at the desk. I'm at the computer for 3 or 4 hours, but then I eat during lunch, half an hour. Then I come back and sit in the desk another 4 or 5 hours. So they didn't break up the continuity in the morning. Okay, ditto. So let's talk about the senior citizen. They're watching the Cardinals on baseball. Okay, that's a long game. It just is. Baseball's a long game. So maybe in a commercial, or maybe when the Cardinals aren't batting, why don't you get up, you know?
And not get a snack, though.
Uh-huh.
They could have a piece of celery, or if they put, well, you know, I'm talking about, I don't mean to bad mouth nuts, but if you put a serving of nuts in a plastic bag, and you have that next to you, there's a reasonable amount of, okay. But if you eat
and popcorn too, though, if it's done correctly, right?
Yes. Oh, it's excellent. Loaded with fiber.
Huh.
But if it's loaded with butter, now you're talking about how much you're going to eat.
And salt.
But butter tastes good.
Oh, yeah.
Salt, different ball games, so on and on and on. But back to the physical activity. Move. The body was made to move.
Well, one thing I want to get to before we run out of time. It doesn't matter what the eating schedule is. I mean, should people eat three times a day and space those meals throughout the day, or is it best to eat two meals a day? Does it matter if you eat before you go to bed?
Well, they're five or six. Now, a lot of times they're saying small meals five or six times a day.
Yeah, you're right. I've heard that too. What do you suggest?
Here's the deal. If you're a diabetic, you better eat four or five meals. But that's a different subject. Okay, so again, to try to tell people generally, here's what you do, but there's a good reason to eat four or five smaller meals. The trick is, somebody that eats four or five meals ends up eating more calories than maybe what they would have done if they only ate three meals.
Unless you see they're careful.
If they track.
Yeah.
So if they're still tracking, there's the answer again, okay? So, and again, if they understand what foods give what calories, what's caloric dense and what isn't, so it all comes back to that.
So you're saying then that, if I understand you, that assuming you control the total calories.
Yeah, there you go.
That it's better to spread your meals out over time versus having one or two or even three larger meals.
There's a lot of evidence that says that. It's controversial, but what works for some folks might not work for others. But if you end up eating more total calories,
then it defeats the purpose.
It defeats the purpose.
So, but one of the reasons you would say eat more smaller meals, assuming the same total number of calories, is the blood glucose, the effect with blood glucose?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, your blood glucose will be more at a moderation. Even if you're not a diabetic, you should be concerned of hyper glucose in your blood. And the reverse is true. If it's hypoglycemic is a very dangerous situation.
That's low blood sugar.
That's low blood sugar. And if it goes below, I don't want to quote figures on the phone. I'm not sure what those letters or that those values are. But if it goes too low, you'll get lightheaded. You could go into a coma. Of course, that's not a good thing. So there's a right amount of glucose in your blood at any given time. A diabetic has to be concerned about both. Too much blood sugar, too low. And boy, how do you? So you work with a registered dietitian who is diabetic educated, and that's how you learn to deal with the diabetes, because you can control, but you're your own doctor every day you live.
And you have to think of those as medicinal decisions every time you eat.
For sure.
Right?
For sure. Yeah, yeah. You're exactly right.
Well, what a wonderful discussion we've had this past 2 weeks. Art, you're going to have to come back. Are you willing to join us?
You talked me into
it. Haven't scared him off yet.
Yeah, talked me into it.
Well, you know, the subject of food, it's just a fascinating topic. Yeah. And as we started out saying last week, it's hugely relevant. Mm-hmm. And it's probably the single most important thing you can talk about when it comes to people's health.
Exactly.
So, unfortunately, we're out of time. But I've enjoyed it. Until next week, eat more fruits and vegetables. Take care.
You've been listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors with attorney CPA Joe Cordell. Listen again next Saturday for another edition of Elder Talk, sponsored by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. For more information, visit eldercarelaw.com. That's eldercarelaw.com. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.